Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you on Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the award-winning Colton Stone. It's weird. I'm back in studio. Colton's like, son of a bee. But I'm back in studio. It has felt like years, Colton, since I've had to guess what hat you're wearing and then finally be right or wrong with it. Back from Kearney yesterday, mucho thanks to Doug Duda, our friends at 1460, 1550, the Superstation, and Cunningham's yesterday for hosting us. Kind of the day after Colorado, and you just have this feel from Nebraska fans moving forward. We'll get into your thoughts on the rest of the season. We spent a little bit of time about that yesterday. But more specifically, your level of attention and investment as a Nebraska fan, and you are absolutely free to do what you want. If you're going to go nighty-night till it's Ohio State from a give-a-crap, totally get it. So we'll get into that in just a moment. Excited to talk with Mitch Sherman, The Athletic. Mitch will be with us. Dennis Rodman has a ESPN 30 for 30 tonight. I love me some Dennis Rodman, one of my favorite players. I'm a Jordan guy like the rest of the world. I'm boring, forgive me. Some of you are Kobe dudes. Some of you love LeBron. But kind of a special dirty pleasure was watching Rodman do his thing. Love Dennis Rodman. Thoughts on the Worm tonight. Dr. Petey is going to join us at 5. We'll hear thoughts from head coach Tom Hammack of Northern. I said Northwestern. Wrong school in Illinois. Tom Hammack joined our friend Doug Duda, so we have some of Tom's thoughts on Nebraska and his time in the NFL. The guy was a running backs coach for the Ravens the last 5 years. And we'll get into some NFL Week 1. Antonio Brown is going full chowder. There we go. Can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Email Chris at HailVarsity.com and can follow us on Twitter, Chris Schmidt at Schmidt underscore radio. Colton Stone, two birds, one stone. We'll get into thoughts from Coach Chenander. He met the media today and some good stuff from Chenander. I love hearing him talk. He's real. Whether if you're still a turd or not, it's all about Chenander and kind of moving on from Colorado. And I think a lot of you have done that. So between airport and bar rooms and folks at rest stops or getting gas or whatever, when you made the trip back from Boulder or Denver and you drove and you made it through Nebraska, you ran into several Nebraska fans, you had the Big Red Army making the convoy out west last Thursday and Friday. Well, you had the gloomy return trip, and we left really early Sunday morning, and it was just kind of dark and cloudy, and it wasn't cold, but it was a bit chilly, and it fits your mood perfectly, especially if you are hungover like no other. And Nebraska fans, I absolutely feel for you because, again, the painting of this picture is nobody liked Lucy, right, with the Peanuts gang. When it came to the Charlie Brown cartoons, some of us were secretly wishing that Lucy got hit in the face with a football at some point in her life. Never has happened. But she'd always jerk around with Charlie Brown and pull the damn football out, and he'd fall. Everyone would think it's great, and, you know, Charlie's mom, who never appeared in any of the Peanuts characters' cartoons, would all hide all sharp objects from Charlie. Especially if he was a millennial now. Kidding. Sorry, Colton. But that's how you feel as a Nebraska fan. Yet again, football is pulled out. 30,000 of you go to Boulder, 30,000 of you spend God knows how much on a ticket, then on hotel, then on booze and food. I mean, you drop the G each at least, probably. All to get flipped off by some trust fund snot that will take 7 years to graduate that you saw on Facebook between the kid hawking a loogie on Spielman and the kid turning his hat backwards and flipping off the Nebraska crowd. Come on, man, bring it on. Oh, you mean the eight security guys in front of you are going to let that happen? So you feel empty inside because you lost that football game. And I think a lot of you are, if you weren't then, you are now in prove it mode. Not big picture for Scott Frost or his staff, but you're kind of like, am I wrong? This season could be shot to hell. You've dialed back what you think the year can be. And Colorado was kind of a measuring stick moment with this team. And you've turned the channel, man. You've turned the channel a lot, and it's okay. You've had to turn the channel a lot with Nebraska football. It isn't on Frost or Adrian or the defense with their second game in their second year, but it's 3 years of Grandpa. It's some of the years that Bo had some close moments and then some bad losses. I'm not going to crucify Pelini because I think his kids played hard all the time. I think Scott's kids have played hard for the most part, especially once they got past Minnesota last year, okay? And then you had Callahan, and, you know, I look at guys like Jay we're close with, Jay Moore. I know he played hard most of his career, if not all of his career, right? You know that type of dude. And then the Frank years. I mean, you haven't had a big win in a long time, and a big win now would have been an unranked year one Colorado team under Mel, right? I mean, the win you lusted over as much as this Colorado ball game was Miami back when the Canes came to town in 2014. So as a Nebraska fan, I think just the feedback has been, son of a gun, this sucks. Well, there's some doubt. There's some real doubt. It went from all-time hype like Adrian can win the Heisman, Nebraska can be a playoff contender. And I didn't like toot that necessarily. I just thought if things break right, listen, they were good enough to do a lot of things. They're still good enough to do a lot of things. They're just going to take some time to get there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just automatic. It's not like just making a sandwich or popping popcorn. It's not microwavable. Or putting it in the toaster. It's going to take some time. And people's timelines are different based on the last 25 years, well, 20 years of Nebraska football, post 20 years. Mm-hmm. And this is just another missed opportunity. We'll get into that with Mitch Sherman. That was a lot of what we were talking about, you know, through Colorado week. And it was a big game. It was a big opportunity. And you just kind of got to go back to the drawing board. And that next big opportunity for the players is Northern Illinois. Night game, it'll be a good time. Get your tailgate on, fire up some brats, pour a cold one, do your thing, have some fun and party. But like your interest level in it is not as fervent because you lost to Colorado. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But I think right now you're kind of wait and see times two. You'll get back involved in based on how things look against Northern Illinois and Illinois. And then you'll maybe drag yourself to the Ohio State game. It isn't going to be an execution like 17, but you're expecting as good a competition as last year because you showed what you could do on the road in year one against them. The thing that, you know, it's hard to do, Colton, is face the fact that this is a very, very different team. And it's supposed to be a better team because you're in year two, right? You lost some key dudes from a year ago that, damn it, if you had this year, it'd be better. And that's just obvious with Ziggy and Stan, but I'm talking a guy like Luke Gifford. And I think leadership is still a work in progress on this team.
Yeah,
it just is. You thought it was going to be all better because it got better towards the end of last year, and it's going to be better in year two. But this team's just far from finished, and they'll get better. These guys will get coached up. They'll get better. They'll win some big games It just may not come as fast as you like. That may even mean, you know what, they're 3-2 before they get Northwestern and Minnesota. I don't know that they can beat Ohio State. I didn't know that they could beat Ohio State if they'd beaten Colorado. Yeah. But your forecast has changed quite a bit.
Yeah, and like you were talking about, as far as like this team's different in more, they're not different in a bad way, but they're not necessarily different where they're so much better than last year's team that
they're worse offensively.
Right, and you can't just like snap your fingers and make Dedrick Mills all of a sudden Divino Zigbo or make him hit what he did at Georgia Tech.
Or
like
Foster and Farmer.
Right. And so, yeah, and that's the offensive line. That there's still things that have to be worked out. And, yeah, I mean, you'd hope that they'd get worked out in fall camp and game one and kind of figure it out a little bit. But, I mean, Frost said it in the presser yesterday. They're better, but they're also not good enough where they can just, like, stop playing after three quarters. But, and it's not necessarily that they stopped playing. It's just that they didn't go for the kill.
It's the urgency, right?
Yeah. And, you know, in the fourth quarter or even, you know, you're up 17-0 at half. You kind of have to go for the jugular.
You're still up 10 with 90 seconds to go in the third. Yeah. I'm still going to bitch about this Colorado game, and I know it's Tuesday. I'm sorry. And some of you are like, give it up, Schmidt. Put your cigarette out and move on to something else. I'm sorry. But it is like, it was kind of that important of a game. It's not end all be all.
Right.
But just think of where you'd be sitting if you'd won it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's son of a gun. And I'm trying to not swear as much anymore. So I'm going to sound old and stupid when I say son of a gun 120 times. You're at the point where you have Nebraska fans that they're just ticked off and they want something good to happen. They want it to happen quicker,
yeah.
Right? And it's supposed to happen quicker because the prodigal son's back. Mm-hmm. That ain't fair to him either. Because I don't, you know what, man? I don't think we'll truly know just how horse crap a culture existed with a pro mentality head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's hands off, it isn't daycare, you do your thing, show up ready to play like you're a pro. And you're not. You're 19 and a redshirt freshman in college, and you're the next big thing, so you're going to start so you don't transfer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, undoing all of that. There's some good that happened with the Riley era, mainly some of the kids they got probably put in here.
Yeah.
And the guy was a nice dude. He's nice. But, and he knows football clearly because he's been college and professional. He's won some games. But my point is you got to unring a really loud, lazy spring break bell.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing about the Colorado game is not even so much like how important the game was as far as like how the season. You they could still win 9 games like that. That's a very like
they can still beat Wisconsin. They can still
right.
beat Iowa. Mo Berry's not wrong saying we could still be an Indy.
And no one will care about the Colorado game.
But people right. are sick of talk because that's
yeah.
the other thing, dude. Is Nebraska talked a lot Colorado week, and that's un-Nebraska-like.
Yeah. I think more
then
than
to
anything.
Then not back it up with a win.
Well, that too. I think more than anything, that was supposed to be your confidence booster. It wasn't supposed to be like, this is the biggest win in the past 10, 15, 20, however many years you want to go back, because that's not what it was. But at the same time, it was your chance to say, like, here we are. We can win games
it's a
on
moment.
The road.
It's a moment.
Yeah. And you then, as a fan base, you become confident that like they can go on the road and beat a team that, I mean, honestly, Colorado looked better this time than they did last year.
Sure.
They, you know, they may not be the toughest team in the Pac-12, but they, on the trenches, they were a lot better than
I am buying stock in Colorado with Mel Tucker.
Yeah.
To somebody, as somebody that, okay, can maybe join the party in the Pac-12 along with Washington and Washington State in Stanford and SC, in Oregon. You might have 6-7 teams in the conference that are 7-8 wins for mm-hmm. the first time in forever in the Pac-12.
Yeah, and obviously Colorado's looking for just their second winning season since 2014, but, I mean, they needed one more game last year. They didn't get it. And
well, dude, they started out 5-0.
Yeah.
And Chenault got hurt, and then it was take a giant crap time.
So I think I think it's going to be the inverse of what happened that when Nebraska beat Oregon at home and everyone's like, this is a great win. And then Oregon became
same type of
not
moment,
good.
Though, right?
Right. It's same type of moment. I think you'd think that it's going to be the inverse. Maybe you'll look back and, hey, Colorado is actually a pretty good team. But, right, it's the same kind of moment. It's not the biggest game in the world, but it's supposed to give you confidence that you can go into another game and win it.
It's one you had, and then you. Yep. It could turn the Ohio State game. It could turn the Wisconsin game. It could turn Northwestern. I mean, it's kind of PTSD is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, almost. I mean, same score and pretty much the same scenario as Northwestern.
So do you get mad and get better from it, or does it make you get shaky if things get tight after you jump out and do everything? These guys got to finish, and we said that 100 times yesterday. We'll see if it can become a reality. Coach Tenander, in 20 minutes, he'll spend a lot of time about finishing the defense where they're at. Some Northern Illinois thoughts. Mitch Sherman will kind of get a look at Nebraska football through his eyes of the Athletic. Derek Peterson. Dr. Petey's making a house call. Thoughts on the NFL and the Dennis Rodman 30 for 30. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Back to you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Welcome in from the Athletic. It is Mitch Sherman time, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, remember, we're standing next to the mystery meat in the Boulder press box, my friend, and we're both saying we should put about $3,000 on Colorado, the second half line and the overs.
Is that what we said? I think that what I was saying is that if I ate the meatloaf in the press box that they were serving in Boulder, if Nebraska ate the meatloaf at halftime, then that would explain everything that happened in the final 30 minutes. Let's put it that way.
You know what? And then mysteriously, the meatloaf was gone.
And I don't know who ate it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, It was not me.
No,
I can assure you that.
It crawled itself down to the locker room.
Yeah, it was capable. It looked capable of that, let me tell you.
I had never been in the Boulder press box, and I'm never going again.
No. Oh, come on. The Boulder press box is fine. I mean, Dave Plotty out there.
I love him. Colorado, he's awesome. He's great.
Does a fine, fine job running that press box. And there was other food to eat, but as a veteran of press boxes, I stayed far away from the meatloaf. And in fact, I made a comment before the game that if I had partaken in that delicacy, I would have slept through the second half, which, you know, looking back on it, I'm wondering if that I was portending some things that did happen at Folsom Field as far as some unnamed people in attendance sleeping through the second half.
Exactly. Mitch, let's get it. I beat this Colorado to a pulp. I mean, between yesterday's show and the reaction show, and it was a ton of fun being out there Friday and pregame Saturday and then Saturday postgame where, like, a nuke was dropped. I mean, my goodness, with not finishing that game and, you know, Nebraska's moving on. They're trying to regroup. And, you know, I'm guilty of thinking this team was ready and grown up enough to handle it. And I'm not, like, killing them. I think they're still going to be a good football team, and they could, and I think they will, get coached up and be better by the end of the year. But, man, we talked for the last 10 days about the opportunity at hand, and I think you nailed it in your column on The Athletic about maturity, you know, maturity and moment.
Yeah, it's like maturity for a whole program. I mean, I'm not talking about individual
guys, but
a program has to grow up and get to the point where it can handle certain moments. And Nebraska's just not there. Watching the first half, it looked like Saturday was going to be the day where some of those hurdles were cleared. I mean, you're not going to declare Nebraska the Big Ten favorite with a win, no matter the score, in Boulder, but as I think I probably mentioned 50 times over the summer, And leading up to that game, Scott Frost was 0-for-5 in road games at Nebraska. And the first one that he won, and when it does happen, when he wins that first one, no matter where it is, it's going to be a big deal. It is a big deal. And it's not an easy thing to do, as we saw in the second half, because of the way this thing, I think, has built up in the minds of a lot of these players. It becomes a situation where when one thing goes wrong, and it wasn't just that, it wasn't all mental. I think there were physical things that impacted Nebraska significantly in the second half, too. But it was largely mental. When one thing goes wrong, you start to play on your back foot, so to speak, and wonder what's going to go wrong next. And for a large portion of the second half, from maybe the middle of the third quarter until the end, that was kind of the vibe that I got from the Huskers in their sideline.
What's your vibe on Adrian Martinez right now?
I think he's working through some things, for sure. I think it's more... I'm trying to decide as I get through this sentence if I want to say it's more physical or more mental with him. It's hard to put things mentally and pin it on Adrian from a mental standpoint because he's just so sharp and so mature. But I think, you know, that's one side of the mental game, and then the other side is just being able to execute the thought process in a game. And that's where he's struggling a little bit right now. I think he's struggling to find some second reads. I think he's struggling with some of the some of the things that are expected of him as a veteran leader in this offense and what he is supposed to do. You know, he's clearly trying to stay in the pocket longer and find those second and third reads, because I think that's something that he wanted to do coming off of his freshman year. He thought, I'm going to be able to cut turnovers. I'm going to be able to convert third downs. We're going to be better in the red zone if I can do this and this and this. And, you know, it's just not all coming together for him right now, and it's leading to some disjointed play. We've still seen moments throughout the first half in Boulder, and then on one drive in the fourth quarter when Nebraska got the ball with 8.5 minutes left and he played more natural and free and instinctive, we saw that guy that I think everybody expected to see throughout this season. And, you know, I think right now, after two games, it's apparent that getting to that place, you know, it wasn't and won't be as easy as a lot of people thought in this offseason. He's going to have to work harder, continue to work harder to get to be that guy who's just, like a slam dunk, all Big Ten candidate or even better. He's not playing at that level consistently at this point. And, there's a lot of reasons beyond what I just said. I mean, the offensive line is a part of it. The running game is a part of it. The receivers getting open are a part of it. But, I think Adrian's quick to point at himself. And that's an accurate assessment, I'd say.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. The Athletic is where you read Mitch, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Listen, he is maybe thinking a little too much. Easy for us to say. I mean, he still is a darn good quarterback. I love when he's on the move. I mean, I thought he did a great job of scrambling and did a really good job of running with the quarterback draw when they pull a tackle. But the times that he got smashed on a blitz that no one picked up, or he got sacked in overtime, he will never point the finger at anybody, but between some of the play calls that put him in a third and long, right, that's been beat up, the play calling in overtime, and also the other 10 guys around him, Adrian had a hell of a lot more help last year. Now, those guys that he plays with now could get there by the end of the year, but as you got to the midway point last year, you saw the line kind of gel. You saw Stanley and you saw Ziggy do their thing. Adrian doesn't have that level of help as we speak right now.
No, there's several people that stand out, but I think the one guy that people maybe took for granted a little too much last year was Divine Odigbo. Yeah. Because of the way this offense is necessitated in this offense to get things going. It's so important, and I heard Adrian, I talked to Adrian about this yesterday, asked Scott Frost about it yesterday. The importance for this offense in this offense to get those first 10 yards and to get a first down when they can rev up the tempo and start to get a defense thinking and on its heels. That seems just extraordinarily important for Adrian Martinez and his rhythm and ability to be at his best. And I think it impacts Scott Frost. Well, I know Scott Frost said it did. It impacts the way that he plays, that he calls plays. If, you know, it's second and eight and it's the second play of the drive, or third and six and the third play of the drive, he's going to call that differently than he would the same down and distance if they've got three or four first downs and they're moving the chains. And Nebraska's better, and I think he's better, and Adrian Martinez is better when the sticks are moving. So I think that's something Nebraska has to work through during the week and weeks of practice and recognize that this offense is not the same offense that they had a year ago, and they can't go too far and get too aggressive at the very beginning of a drive, or you're going to put your defense in a really bad spot where they're on the sideline in a three and out for like 60 seconds of real time. You can't do that too much. It's good they have some defensive depth, and I think they need to take that into consideration with the way that they call plays on offense and run the offense. But it's all still being very much worked out by Scott Frost and Martinez and that offensive line and different pieces on offense. I think they'll get there. I don't think, you know, they can't wait until the end of the season to get there. They've got to be there. You know, they've got 2 weeks essentially to work things out. These are the two games left on the schedule that I think everybody would rate as the least difficult of the 10 that remain. And they're not like slam dunk wins. Nothing is right now. These are challenging games, but you know, they're an opportunity to be able to have to work some things out that I don't think will exist when they get to Ohio State and Northwestern and other games after that.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Mitch, about 2 minutes. Where do you think the fan base is at right now? You saw the red. I saw it in Boulder, and it's another what could have been situation, different era, different head coach, but same feeling for a lot of Nebraska fans.
Well, people are kind of, I get the sense, are kind of fractured right now. I mean, that was a tough one. You know, Scott Frost said it was one of the toughest losses, or the toughest loss that he'd ever been associated with. And you know, I think fans felt that too. I mean, you could see them just standing there in disbelief at the end of that game as the Colorado students ran on the field. It was quite a sight to look at all of that red in the stands. Like, people just didn't want to move because they didn't want to have to walk out of that stadium and like admit to themselves that they just watched that happen. So it takes a few days, I think, to get past that. I don't think, you know, you wake up on Sunday morning and go, all right, that's over, you know, let's move on and roll Northern Illinois, or, you know, just get back to being like things are normal. But, you know, Nebraska fans will be there on Saturday night. It's going to be a good atmosphere. I think it could be maybe slightly more subdued at the beginning because of what happened in Boulder. But, you know, Nebraska comes out and scores a touchdown or has a good defensive series to start, and people will get back into it. I mean, look, they weren't expected to go 12-0 this year, and some slip-ups were going to happen somewhere along the way. You didn't want it to happen in week two. I think it was important, really important, for Nebraska to win that game. But people will be able to move forward if this team looks like a good group out there on Saturday night. I think they'll move forward quickly.
Mitch, about 20 seconds. What's coming up from you at The Athletic?
Got some interesting stuff on the kicking situation at Nebraska, and you know what all has happened and where they're at and who they're looking at. I think some people may be surprised to read exactly what's been going on behind the scenes with the kickers. So that'll be out ASAP on our site.
Mitch, you're awesome. Good to see you in Boulder. We'll have you over for some real meatloaf sometime, all right?
All right. Sounds good. But, I'll have to get the ingredients before I dig in.
Take care, man. Thanks again.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
There he is, Mitch Sherman with us. Hail Varsity continues.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff from Mitch Sherman. We'll have that posted on the on-demand ESPN Lincoln, and we'll have some Mitch's thoughts on Adrian Martinez's play. For the SoundCloud, reminder about buckling up. Friends of the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety want to remind you that the seatbelts prevent excessive injury, and you want the seatbelt or the windshield to stop you when you're flying forward. Seatbelts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and body need to slow down in a hurry. That applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now, click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. 466-3776-800-825-5865. You can get in. Chris at HaleVarsity.com. Give us a follow on Twitter. I'm Chris Schmidt, Schmidt underscore radio, or Colton Stone at Two Birds, One Stone. We'll get into the 150 greatest college football teams in the 150 year. Don't worry, we won't hit all of them. We'll tell you where some of the Nebraska teams are at, and you can throw things at the screen and radio when I tell you where the 94 team is or the 95 team is. We'll get there. Thoughts on Northern Illinois. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey making a house call is coming up. My thoughts on the Rodman 30 for 30. And we were talking a little bit about that other A word. Not abstinence. Not the other word from the Millers. Talking apathy. Now, I don't think it's like there. I hate even like going there this soon. I think you're still fired up as a Nebraska fan base, but you're just still hurt. Okay, a guy that is getting the hurt out, getting his team ready, Coach Chenander. Love what he's doing. I loved watching that Nebraska defense, man, for a lot of that Colorado game. They tackled well. I know they got the bar tab for the point total in the second half. But they tackled well. They hit hard. They were locked in. They weren't perfect. But even when they got kicked in the junk, God knows how many times in the midst of the momentum run by Ralphie and company, they made some plays to give the offense a chance to put it away. I thought the defense played very well. But more from Coach Chenander here when it comes to that point we've hit on here, growing up as a defense, growing up as a program.
Yeah, you take a lot of good out of the first part. I mean, we played three quarters of really good football and didn't finish the football game. We've got to be able to finish. And that's, you know, hate to say it, but that's part of growing up as a program. We got to finish on defense. We've got to finish the fourth quarter like we played the first three, and we win that football game. It should have been, you know, that's a good football team, but they should have had, you know, 7 points, 14 points. Should have never came to that.
Amen. He's right. He knows it. His kids know it. Can he get him there? Mitch is right. You got 2 weeks, right? Shake off a bad quiz or test and go tackle the next big fish here. So Chenander got a little more specific. What bothered you about Saturday?
Obviously, I think the guys, you know, you play a lot of plays, you're a little gassed, but there was not a sense of urgency to get lined up. There was not a sense of urgency to make the calls. We had a couple assignment busts that were crucial, you know, and then we just didn't have that killer instinct at the end.
Same page as his head coach. So I thought Nebraska did have a moment of killer in them. And this is the play that we're talking about here where you got Cam Taylor, he's locked in coverage on, is it Smith? See the dude?
Yeah, I think so.
Smith,
yeah.
Right, that hit him on the flea flicker?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Lamar that goes out, Cam comes in, they blitz Dismuke, and it's a flea flicker. Because they're backed up to their own goal line. Why not bury him in their goal line? And that's a lot of either edibles or, you know, wacky tobacco being, you know, it's 17-7. Screw it. What do you got to lose? You're getting beat. This is your last gasp. Let's flea flicker it and go pick on the new corner. That's probably your best defensive player this year, I think, so far, is Cam Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't necessarily like a bad read or a bad blitz call or anything like that.
He just got caught in the wrong spot.
Oh, yeah. And it just happened. The pass was in the right spot at the right time for Colorado, and it was just barely out of reach. for the defender. Mm. I mean, that's just sometimes you kind of got to bite that bullet.
You do. You're gonna live and die by it, as Coach McBride said. Last thought here from Chenander on Saturday, and that's putting Saturday behind you. Because you got another one Saturday. I mean, Northern Illinois, I mean, they did Nebraska a favor by getting the Shermanator fired, right? I mean, that game, it was the end of the Riley era, or kind of the beginning of the end for the I-Corst era. And you don't ever want to, like, point and laugh at someone's misfortune professionally. That sucks when you get whacked. That said, the guy who doesn't see his own shadow magically appeared to get in front of cameras after, well, I don't know what that was, but it was unacceptable. Yeah, I mean, that was the first of Northern Illinois and then Troy, right?
Yeah.
You'd like to think as Nebraska, you're never going to be that program that's got to dodge a bullet against a not even you don't count program. That's arrogant to say, but that's a lot of the thought out there. Look, you're in the MAC. You don't matter. Mm-hmm. A lot of good football in the MAC. Northern Illinois has been really, really good for, you know, the Kill years and beyond, and this guy is no slouch. The coach they got, Coach Hammock, good ball player, good coach. But here is moving on from Coach Chenander.
You have to. You can't let a loss beat you twice. So you've got to be able to watch the film, learn from the film on Sunday or Monday, and then move on. And I think those guys did. They had a great practice on Monday. They had a great practice today. So, you know, I don't really want to be talking about it today. I have to, unfortunately. But I want those guys focused on the next one. We got to move on.
You know, the question I have is it going to reinforce confidence, the beer being half full with how you played in your biggest game to date, or is it going to take away from your confidence? And that's what we won't know till Saturday night, and you're at home. But we won't really know that until it's 7 o'clock with Papa Smurf and the Illini on the road trying for that first road win right in front of Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And let's look at Cut 11 here. The whole fear of failure thing, is that just talk at this point? And I don't think it is. But you looked gun-shy in some questions. Coach Chenander answered that question.
Yeah, I don't think there's a fear of failure right now. I just think that it wasn't, you know, the knife's in and we got to twist it. That's the part we've got to get better at. I don't think these guys are not afraid to fail. They're not afraid to go out and give it all they got. It's just learning how to put a team away once you're up. I think that's the main goal.
You know, going into the year, there was some talk of the defense having to carry the offense till the offense got ready. There was some talk that the offense will be good. The concern was the defense. I think the defense has been good enough in two games, and they'll need to be better moving forward. The offense got to get it figured out. Tomorrow we'll hear from Coach Austin. Tomorrow we'll hear from Coach Walters. You know, where's the offense going to be? I mean, the O-line, the wideouts, Coach Held in his running back room. I mean, Mo Washington, despite all the crap he's dealing with, he's played pretty well. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity continues.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, it's Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Get his thoughts. We'll have some words from the head coach of Northern Illinois, courtesy of Doug Duda, Tom Hammock. The NFL was pretty awesome this weekend. I know Denver fans are... well, they're upset. Oakland fans are still beautiful because of how they celebrate a win. And a guy that was a Raider for, how long was Antonio Brown a Raider? Like 2 months?
At least the summer.
Right? So the summer?
Yeah.
The summer months?
Pretty much. Enough to be on
and
Hard Knocks
saying,
and then bail.
And they're just dropping F-A-B. After every touchdown. And the last Monday night in the black hole in Oakland. I almost tried some meth just as tribute to the black hole. I'm kidding. Because of all the years there. Wow. Dennis Rodman also in action tonight with the ESPN 30 for 30. I love Rodman. He is very emotional. So no, we got to set an over-under on the number of times Rodman is on camera crying. tonight?
6.5
6.5 That's the footage?
I think so.
The number of footage clips that have him weeping?
Yeah.
God, that's a good number.
Yeah, because
I'm gonna go over.
I feel like it's gonna be like right around.
It will
right,
be
like right around
because he is. I remember reading his biography. As bad as I want to be, I got it for my. Actually, I got it for graduating high school. That's when he put his biography out.
Let's see, it's an hour, probably an hour's worth of footage. I'll take the under, but it'll be close.
We got to talk to Coach Brett here about getting his junior's baseball practice done in a timely fashion so I can watch this thing. Okay, if you log on to ESPNLincoln.com, Hail Varsity's on the road. We're back for a home football Friday at the Graduate. Troy and the gang have such an amazing place at the Graduate. 9th and P is where we're at. This is our second year on home football Fridays. Your chance to go win Nebraska, Northern Illinois tickets, first of all. Get some cool ESPN and Husker headquarters gear. Have a drink and something to eat at the Tiki Bar. But what we're doing, and we had folks down there for the opener, it's the longest drive competition. And if you've not been to the Graduate, they've got Top Golf simulators. So you can see one of our contestants swinging away in front of the simulator. And I think it's Pebble Beach is what we're simulating, right? So you've got a chance to qualify and show up, and you get three swings, and your longest swing counts. And if you're the winner, you get a gift card, which is sweet. But then you're in the running to defend the following week, which will be Ohio State Week. So we're taking 10 contestants, and we're going to take callers 1 through 4. Right now, we'll be at the Graduate 4 to 6 on Friday, 9th and P. We invite you down and be a part of the longest drive competition. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. You don't want to bring Big Bertha, the driver, out. They have drivers there for you. But come hang out, enjoy Home Football Fridays. Callers 1 through 4 qualify, and we'll see you down to the Graduate Friday at 4 for the longest drive competition. Callers 1 through 4 right now at 466-3776, 800-825-5865.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Tower 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, we say hi to the good doctor. He's making a house call. Derek Peterson at HailVarsity.com and magazine at Dr. PDHB. So did you smile when Ralphie ran onto the field, or were you just kind of like, this is overrated?
Dude, that was cool. I think it's cool. I think every school should have a live mascot. I want to see Colorado play Texas, and if you got live mascots, like I pitched this in the office. I was like, every school needs to have a live mascot, and those live mascots need to play a game of chicken before the kickoff. I'm not advocating animal cruelty here. I want to see who flinches first, like the Bevo against the Georgia Bulldogs thing from last year. Like, who flinches first? Whoever flinches first has to start the game on defense.
Remind me of what happened instead of the coin flip. Okay. So Remind me what happened with Bevo and Uga. Did Uga like try and bite Bevo, or did Bevo actually snap out of his drug-induced coma and make a move towards the dog?
They like tried to put the two together. They like tried to have a meet before the game started, and Bevo like charged at the dog. It was like, I'm not putting up with this. Charged at him.
See, usually it's Uga that's trying to bite people or nip at people, Derek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Bevo that was not having any of it.
The Sugar Bowl, man, I was out on. I don't mind Georgia, but I didn't want to witness Texas have a "we're back" moment, right?
I have a theory on Texas, because they just lost to LSU. I have a theory on Texas. Texas is that team that wants to be in those games but they're not winning those games so that when they win a game like the Sugar Bowl, they can proclaim Texas is back. But they're never actually all the way back because they still want to be able to say Texas is back. But if they win, like, the game against LSU, it's like, okay, you're expected to win that game because you are, in fact, quote-unquote, back. But they don't want to get to that point because they still want to have a storyline of Texas is back. Ellinger still wants to be able to say Texas is back. That's my theory.
That's fine. And at some point, you've got to stack some wins against some big-time foes versus being a one-hit wonder. And speaking of back and showcase and momentum, Nebraska-Colorado was set up for Nebraska. They're ranked, and they're one of few teams coming in off of a 4-8 season that get ranked. While nationally, it was, hey, cool, Nebraska and Colorado, two teams that hate each other from the Big 12 and Big 8 are playing. That was the storyline. It didn't really go any further nationally than that because it was all about Texas and LSU, right? Or watch out for Army Michigan, right? So Nebraska, sure. Colorado was kind of nationally forgotten, but it was the best game of the weekend, you could argue, when it comes to just drama back and forth. Now, it was the sickest game of the weekend if you're a Nebraska fan. Yep. Derek, I love your work, your three thoughts, your columns, your love and hate. I mean, you do such a great job with Hail Varsity. At what point did, like, doubt about Nebraska finishing this thing creep into your mind?
I was talking to Greg Smith about this. I have a little bit of a different take, like, because, like, you know, you can see some of the Nebraska people on this beat. They're like, oh no, here we go again. They've been around here for a while. Like, I have a couple names in my head. I'm sure they're like, oh man, they're really going to do this again. Me, I haven't been around here. This is my third year covering the team. I haven't been around here for the last however many years. There seems like some very real apathy within the fan base right now, just listening to people coming back from, you know, the game, listening to people, listening to airport conversations. There seems to be a little bit of apathy and like, oh yeah, well, they did it again. They lost again. I'm sure. I was still surprised because, you know, Mo Berry had a quote after the game that I thought was the most interesting thing said after the game. He was asked, what could finishing this off have meant for the team? And he said, it would have proved the naysayers wrong. It would have proved that Nebraska is here. It would have proved that Nebraska is deserving of this recognition that it got in the offseason. It would have proved that the black shirts are here. Like Frost said, that was maybe the best first three quarters that a Nebraska defense has played in how long? Put a date in there. They were phenomenal. They were so good. Finishing that thing off, it would have given validation to everything that was said this offseason. And I never really bought into the idea that losing to Colorado on the road, losing a rivalry game against a non-conference opponent would wreck their season. I still don't think it will wreck their season. Mo had the comment. He's like, nobody's going to care about Colorado when we're in the Big Ten championship game. And the thought process behind that is a non-conference win or a non-conference loss, excuse me, does not impact their conference standing. They're still 0-0 in conference. So their goals for the season being a Big Ten West title are still completely attainable. This loss does not affect that. I was surprised with I think it was 5 minutes to go. Nebraska gets the ball back after Cam Taylor-Britt forces a fumble on the kickoff. I was surprised with, one, the play calling on that first play. I think they took a shot and they didn't get it. And they were able to run a little bit of time off the clock. But Frost was aggressive there in a moment where I thought he should have tried to be a little bit more conservative. You know, Nebraska was running the ball. The offense wasn't great in the fourth quarter, but it wasn't like the third quarter. Like, they could move it. And they moved it. They either scored one or two times in the fourth quarter.
Two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. The answer touchdowns, when it looked like the wind was completely taken out of them, kind of wowed me because Nebraska came back, Colorado cut it to three or tied the thing, and then Nebraska answered with a long drive, then played 75 yards to go up 31-24.
Yeah.
But that drive you're touching on, man, that was so huge where you get the fumble after Chanel almost ties it or actually gives Colorado the lead, taking it on the punt or the kickoff return. Cam's hustle to strip that thing was insane.
Yeah.
And then you try a stop and go, you get screwed on a air quote intentional grounding call when it's just an incomplete pass. You know, the guy broke the route off. He wasn't trying to avoid a sack. But yeah, you're right, man. When it comes to play calling, and it's easy to be a snot-nosed radio guy and say, well, he's not calling plays great, right? I mean, I have no earthly idea what it's like to call a a game, let alone when it gets tight, you know, fire up my favorite four Madden plays and know they're going to work. I'm saying this, that I think you're right, where you could have been a little more cautious, you went big. And when you could have went big, you went a little more cautious in overtime.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And we could talk. Like, I don't want to get to a point where it sounds like I'm criticizing Frost's play calling, because I don't think we have reached a point yet. He's 14 games into his Nebraska tenure. I don't think we've reached a point yet where there is due criticism. Like, we can question it, and I'm going to question it, because I want to know the reasoning behind playing it aggressive once you get the ball, because there's 5 minutes left in the game and you're up by seven. You just had the answer drive. You could, and I mean, theoretically, you have just snuffed out the last bit of momentum that Colorado had, because that kickoff return was setting Colorado up inside Nebraska's territory. Instead, Nebraska gets a turnover and they've got a chance to run a little bit of 4 minute offense and kill the game. You're aggressive there, which is fine. You're not aggressive in overtime. And, you know, the runs, he wanted to call the two best run plays. It's whatever, fine. Mo was doing some work getting to the edge, and he was effective getting to the edge against that Colorado defense. They weren't great at setting the edge the week before, whatever. A quarterback draw with Martinez was working. Maybe you dial that up on first down, whatever. Not wanting to be aggressive and not wanting to put the ball in Martinez's hands is questionable to me. I really want to know what the reasoning was behind, you know, your best player on the team and the guy that you have already been on the record saying is going to be the guy that's going to take your team to the places you want it to go. You don't want to put the ball in his hands. Is it just reactionary to the interception that he threw on the last drive of the game that sent it to overtime? Is it, you know, I don't really know.
I think you're right. I think you're right. If you're guessing, I think it is. He just threw a pick with seconds left, and he was locked in on Noah. Maybe there was somebody else open. I got to go rewatch, but every time they've tried to go to Noah, there's been no separation, and that's just a fact. I mean, Nebraska's been able to carve people up. What I'd like to see happen, and maybe Colorado is spying him in that moment, in that situation, but every time Adrian's been able to roll and do something on the move, obviously with his quarterback draws, when you've got Hymus or Farniak kind of pulling inside to go, pave the way for him, convoy time, those are really effective, and they've been good runs. The turnovers are a very real thing, though, with last year and so far through two games this year. It's not that Adrian's being careless. People are just making plays on him, and I think that interception probably spooked Frost a little bit, right, wrong, indifferent, whatever. I think that was his thinking going in. But when it's third down and nine or whatever, and Adrian's back there, and he himself says, I held it too long. He was waiting for someone to get open. Either a guy like JD gets open, or there's a seam open for Stoll, or you got Wandale, but no one else seems to really get open, right? I mean, that's the feel. Yeah. I've gotten through two games. But when Adrian's been on his move, the best play for Nebraska was, when it came to running aside from Moe's little 40-yarder, was Adrian on the move scrambling. I would have loved the run-pass option there on third and whatever, rolling him to his right and let someone streak across the middle where he can either dump it or tuck it and put somebody in a leverage situation. But he dropped back and he got sacked, you know?
Yeah, and you touched on something that I think is really a problem that not a ton of us were expecting coming into the season. That's an inability for the non-J.D. Spielman, non-Wandale Robinson guys to make an impact on the game, in a passing game in particular. Mm-hmm. Like, Mo's been fine on the run game, I think.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is, like, threefold right now. Like, it's not all on the center snapping thing. I wasn't expecting it to be turned around as quickly as it was. Cam was great. Not an issue at all.
He was fine, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you're looking at, Frost talked about after the game, he's like, look, we can't scheme these guys open every single play. We just can't do it. They have to provide some sort of separation. If you look at the way Colorado used Chenault, they just tried to get him the ball in a bunch of different ways. It's fine when you got one guy, but it's just hard to really scheme four or five guys open to get the ball all the time.
Right.
So the guys outside of J.D. Spielman, they're not finding the separation. There are a couple parts. The guys like Konovine know it. The guys like Jack Stoll, guys like Mike Williams, they're just not able to find separation. They're not able to get open. And I think part of it, too, is Adrian isn't trusting enough of those guys at this point, either in the season or in his career. He's not trusting enough of those guys to throw them the ball when they've got a little bit of separation. It needs to be you are clearly open. It can't be like it is with JD, where he's like he's got a guy close to him, but Martinez trusts that if he puts the ball in a specific spot, JD can go make the play. I don't think he has that trust with a guy like Konovine Noah yet. I don't think he has that trust with a guy like Jack Stoll yet, which is a little disappointing, I would say, because I think Jack Stoll, like I said this after the first game, I thought Jack Stoll is the second best receiving option that Nebraska has, and for him to only have 3 targets and 2 catches in a completely non-impactful game against Colorado, I thought was disappointing. I thought they had an advantage there that they could have used, and they didn't. So it's not all on the receivers, and it's not all on Adrian to just start throwing the ball to those guys and testing those guys a little bit more, but there's a problem right now with, you know, there's a disconnect between quarterback and receiver where it's either JD's got to make a play, you get Wandale the ball, you know, 5 yards laterally mm-hmm. and just see if he can do something, or it's Maurice Washington rushing to the edge. And that, you know, we can get into a conversation about play calling, but when you have, you can't run up the middle, so you're confined to, you know, perimeter zone running games, or you're confined to swing passes and screen plays out on the edge, and you don't have a quarterback that trusts that he can throw the ball over the middle of the field to a guy like Jack Stoll, you're really, really limited as a play caller. So a lot of the stuff that's been vanilla, I think it's just Nebraska, Frost is stuck between a rock and a hard place right now, and, you know, some of these things have to start figuring themselves out to provide a little bit of a pressure release for this offense so that they can just start getting everything else to work.
Derek Peterson's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Dr. PDHV on Twitter is where you follow him. Doctor, got about a minute 15 here. Northern Illinois, level of concern for Saturday night?
I think you have to have a little bit of concern because of the way that they closed the last game. I mean, and the fact that they didn't look good against South Alabama the way we thought they would. You know, everybody's saying the right things, that they didn't respect Northern Illinois 2 years ago and that won't be the case this week and all that stuff. But, you know, I think a lot of the fan base has reached a point where, you know, I saw people were upset over Mo saying Colorado's not going to matter, we're in the Big Ten championship game, because they want him to stop talking and prove it on the field. And there's a little bit of that at play right now. Like, they need to have a step on your throat, keep your foot there kind of game against Northern Illinois. And it's a team that, you know, it is a good team, but Nebraska, if Nebraska wants to be a great team, Nebraska needs to whoop up on Northern Illinois. And it needs to be, you know, if they're up 17-0 at halftime again and the defense plays the way the defense played against Colorado, the offense needs to come out with the same kind of intensity in the third quarter and put the game away. If the offense had scored on the first drive or the second drive against Colorado, the game would have been done. It would have been a 34-14 game, 34-14 win for Nebraska. Instead, they lost. If they're in a similar situation against Northern Illinois, there's the potential they can be. They need to step on a throat, and they need to keep the foot there. And they just need to find that killer instinct. I think this is a game where they can. You don't want to mess around with teams like this, because you saw what happened in 2017.
Doctor, have a good trip, and can we say what you're doing, or is that shrouded in mystery?
No, we can say what I'm doing. I'm going. We're doing a food issue for Hail Varsity Magazine again next month, and so I'm going to talk to a family that had to feed 4 offensive linemen. So I want to know
how much
that costs and how often mom and dad were drowning in grocery bills and meal prep.
Love it, Doctor. We'll talk to you this weekend, bud. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, man.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Good stuff from Derek Peterson. Dr. Petey can find that posted on demand, ESPNLincoln.com. So let us get into the discussion of greatest college football teams of all time. 150 of the greatest teams in the 150 year of college football. history. And we'll talk with Brad Edwards tomorrow on this. But Ivan Mizell. Smart dude. Had a part in this. It's not all his rankings. But he got a panel of 150 media members, athletic administrators, former players, and coaches. So here's who went into this, right? You've got scribes, some of our friends, Chris Dufresne, formerly of the LA Times. You've got some coaches, sports information directors, members of ESPN, Gus Johnson of Fox, Paul Keels of Ohio State, Rick Neuheisel, Dave Revson, and then Coach Barnett and Beamer, Norm Chow, Dennis Erickson, Ralph Friedgen, Les Miles, Bob Stoops, Jim Plunkett, no T.O., no Switzer. But it's pretty good. And you look at the number one team in the history of college football, the greatest team in college football history is the 1971 Nebraska football team. So you've got a team that's number one. Is it the right team that's number one? 71 versus 95. Should have yelled at Babbers today. We'll do that this week.
I thought we were going to start with 150. I thought we were, you know.
Go all the way in. Well, it's funny. Like, scrolling through this here, like, the scoring explosion team, the 83 Huskers, They're top 35 good. They're ranked in front of the 85 Sooners. They're a ton of spots in front of the 83 Hurricanes that won the national championship and beat Nebraska or survived Nebraska with the two-point conversion.
Right.
But what put Nebraska up here, and this is really pretty impressive, Nebraska won against the number two Sooners in the game of the century, 35-31. They beat then number nine Colorado 31-7. They beat number two Alabama in the Orange Bowl, crushed Bear Bryant 38-6. They had a bunch of All-Americans, Larry Jacobson, Rich Glover, Willie Harper, Johnny the Jet, Jerry Tagge, Jeff Kenney, my old coach Frosty Anderson. I mean, they killed it. They were awesome. And this is how the polls finished. Nebraska 1, OU 2, Colorado 3, Bama 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, listen, that's pretty nice. And I remember, like, Pete Carroll and USC fever. Remember it very vividly because Nebraska played USC in 06 and 07. When you think the second greatest team in the history of college football, the 150-year history of college football, does 2004 USC jump to your mind? I mean, they had star power. They were fun to watch. I think more about the 05 Trojans with the game against Texas and the Bush push game at Notre Dame than I do with a team that went undefeated 13-0 and won a title. And I know Bo was defensive coordinator that year for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma got smoked. I mean, just got rocked in the Orange Bowl, 55-19. So, I mean, I think SC's top 10 good. I don't put them in front of the 95 Huskers. I don't put them in front of the 01 Canes. And I have as much as I dislike Texas football, the 05 Longhorns were great.
Oh, yeah.
They were fun. But if I'm putting my thoughts together on this, I think you go a 1A, 1B with 71 Nebraska, 95 Nebraska. And then I think you absolutely have to go 01 Hurricanes.
Yeah.
I mean, they had one close game against Boston College that Ed Reed bailed them out on. Nebraska football in 95 didn't have a close game. And in 71, you won the game of the century against the second best team in college football. I think you got to put the 0-1 Hurricanes there at number three. I think you can listen to that 0-4 USC squad. I think you can listen to 0-5 Texas, late 70s Alabama, sure, I guess. Some of the 50s Oklahomas, sure, I guess. Alabama's teams have made it look so easy in the Saban era, but the Saban team, a Saban championship team, doesn't come in till number 10. I look at this. What do you think of last year's Clemson championship team?
Yeah,
is it too soon to say they're great? They're one of the greatest. Maybe Trevor Lawrence is a freshman winning it.
I think they're a great team, but top 10.
Well, here's like the soon? Here's the conversation, right? Is it too soon to put Clemson in the top 10 of the 150 greatest teams? Okay, and I look at their defense. I mean, their defense was phenomenal. What slights Nebraska on this list is the fact that the 95 team only had Tommy Frazier as an All-American, and I disagree. I mean, and Lawrence Phillips did not get an All-American vote, but he was the best running back in the country. Amon Green was probably the second best running back in the country, and Nebraska's front seven, I think 9 of the 11 all went to the NFL. Much like Miami in 01. So some teams that are on here that kind of make me think about college football. You've got the late 80s Miami teams with Jimmy Johnson. You have some of Bobby Bowden's teams. Mm-hmm. Now, 94 Nebraska comes in at number 15. 15 out of 150.
Top 10%.
Top 10. I think that's a fun team. Mm-hmm. The 88 Notre Dame team I thought was incredible. Barry Alvarez was the defensive coordinator. Sweet Lou Holtz was the head coach. They won at number 2 USC. They survived Miami, the Catholics versus the Convicts game, 31-30. I was always a big Zorich guy. Tony Rice was an amazing option quarterback. I liked them a lot. 91 Miami comes in at top 20. Pittsburgh squad was good. The 91 Washington Huskies come in at 23. They were good. 97 Nebraska still cracks the top 25 of all-time greatest teams.
Here's what I think the biggest statement about that one is. If you look for the 97 Michigan team, which is on the list.
It's like 40s.
19 spots behind. So I think they're making a statement that we know who the real national champion was that year.
Well, and then Dirty and In at 25 is the 2000 Sooners. Remember that team?
Jason White?
No, it was he's there. He's Central Florida's coach now.
No, Heupel.
Yeah, Heupel. Yeah. Like Heupel, I mean, Leach recruited him from JUCO, uh-huh. And then Leach got the tech job. So you got Heupel in there throwing like just punts up. I mean, here's what's impressive about that Oklahoma team. Here's what their October was. All right, their October was Oklahoma, Texas. Then it was Kansas State, mm-hmm. And then it was Nebraska. They got everybody consecutively.
It's like the Big Ten now,
and they won. Mm-hmm. And that 2000 Oklahoma team's good. 86 Penn State comes in at 26. There's a lot of college football teams. 71 Nebraska in at 31. What's funny is Nebraska's 83 team comes in at number 36, way ahead of Miami. Clemson's 81 team played Nebraska. What about the Cam Newton Auburn squad? They come in at 41. I'm interested to see where the Auburn team. Do they make the list? The Auburn team that played for the national championship against Jameis, do they make it? Because they had some miracle upon miracle wins.
2013.
Yeah, yeah. 1970 Nebraska team went 10-0-1. That was impressive. 2011 Bama comes in at 51. 05 USC at 52. Man. 03 USC at 54. Because, okay, if 04 is so damn good, the USC team, why is the 03 team and the 05 team, like, not even top 50? I'm sorry, man. You're going to have to talk me into USC 04 being, like, top 7.
Yeah. Personally, I feel like the 05 team is more memorable, like you said.
Yeah.
It might just be because of how great the BCS title game was.
I mean, the 05 team had better wins. They just had a loss to Vince.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was their own backyard they lost.
It's a shame that Boise State 06 is down in like the 130s, but that's okay.
You remember them for their Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah.
They should have been playing Nebraska, right? But they weren't.
Right.
Okay, this is great. 82 Penn State, the team that the rest of this state hates still because they stole a win. They are ranked 79. That's funny. That's hilarious. Ah, Tim Tebow, 84. The 06 Florida Gator team. I'm not seeing a lot of Urban Meyer teams on here. That's the first Urban Meyer team I see. 57 Auburn, if you said number 95, good for you.
111, 2010 TCU, Rose Bowl TCU.
Really? Nick Saban's first title team? Comes in at 102. Bear Bryant's Maryland team at 109.
Here's another Urban Meyer. Yeah, 2014 Ohio State, 118.
Where is the 1996 Arizona State squad?
I found the 75 Arizona State. I couldn't.
Yeah, they beat Nebraska. McBride was on there. Ah, yes, the Colorado team of 1990 that split the national title. 122.
There's a lot of good football. I think that's what we found.
That's pretty good.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. Thanks for spending time. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. Can dial us up. We'll get you more chances to qualify for the longest drive competition. That's going on at the Graduate, part of our Home Football Friday festivities. Your chance at Nebraska, Northern Illinois tickets. Your chance at gear. From Husker headquarters, I want to see you down there Friday, 4 to 6 at the Graduate, 9th and P. And check things out, food, drinks, gear, and the Top Golf simulators. And we'll do the longest drive competition on Friday. Get qualified, swing away. The longest drive is your score and your chance to win gift cards and a party with your friends at the Graduate. I want to remind you about the Sauter Heyman, Rick and the gang getting ready for this weekend, college football, Nebraska, Northern Illinois, and the rest of the season. They've got your answer if you're doing a little tailgating, but you need to up your game. How about a Traeger grill? And it's free. When you spend $2,500 with Sauter Heyman, you get a free Traeger grill. Heat up your tailgate more ways than one. And get her the jewelry she dreams about. Get yourself instantly rewarded for being a great husband or boyfriend with that Traeger grill. And it's what you need for this football season. Three locations for you, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, or out west in Grand Island. Log on, SauterHeyman.com. Let's hear a little bit here from the Northern Illinois coach who's coming in. And this is year one for Tom Hamick. And a little background on Hamick. Guy was the Baltimore Ravens running backs coach since 2014. He has been at Wisconsin. He has been at Northern Illinois. That's where he played his college ball. He has been part of the University of Minnesota. And Ross Bowers is somebody that you'll watch when it comes to Saturday night. He's a grad transfer quarterback from Cal. So he's pretty good. Can move his feet, keep plays alive, and they played well against Utah. I mean, a really pretty good Utah squad that's supposed to be your Pac-12 favorite. First of all, it was a 35-17 game, so no slouch there. But let's spend a little bit here on Hamick And his take, this is pretty good here. You know, Doug Duda sat down with him, our friend Doug that was with us yesterday from Central Nebraska's Superstation, and got some comments here from Hammock here. And we'll run cut. What do we have here? 14?
Or 13.
13. Sorry, 13. Yeah, 14. Yeah, yeah. Why are you coming back to Northern Illinois? You've had great success and a lot of impressive people in the NFL.
Well, this is a job that I've always wanted. I've always wanted to have the opportunity to shape and mold and help develop young men. That's always been a goal of mine. And I think, you know, for me personally, going to the NFL and learning football, getting my PhD in football, and then having the ability to come back and relate that with the players, for me has been something that's I've been thinking about for a long time.
So, look, he could have stayed comfortable, not jacked with recruiting. He could have done a lot just doing his thing in the NFL. He'd done college for a while, right? But he said, you know what, Northern Illinois is where I played college ball. It's a good program. It's a really good program. More from Coach Hammock.
I got a better understanding of how to deal with players. I think before I went to the National Football League, you look at players and you push them, and then you go to the National Football League and you realize, you know, these guys are men, they have families, they're people. So now you become more of a relational coach where you get to understand the players, what makes them tick, get a better understanding of, I remember being in college and, you know, if somebody fumbles, you get on them. You know, somebody fumbles on the pros, they like, coach, this is my livelihood. You know, I have a family. So you start to look at things from a different perspective.
It's what he's learned in the NFL and just maybe how you treat college kids. And I think it's case by case for sure. But, yeah, I always got the impression the lower level of football you're playing, be it, you know, grade school, college, high school, there was that ability to lay into somebody when they made a mistake. And hopefully they won't do it again. But it's all about situation and timing and personality. More here about Northern Illinois. 2 years ago, they beat Nebraska. That was kind of the oh no moment for Nebraska football, one of many during that era. But how much talk is there about beating Nebraska in Lincoln from 2 years ago? You got kids on the team that were part of that win.
No, you know, we really don't talk about it. It's just, it's two different teams with two different coaches. The one thing I can talk to the players about is draw the experience of being in that atmosphere, which I think is, you know, probably one of the best atmospheres in college football. You know, I had a chance to go there when I was at Wisconsin, and the way how loud it is and how into it the fans are is a great setting for college football. So we try to draw upon those things, how to handle the environment. But on a football field, I mean, you know, we're playing a lot different offense than what they saw 2 years ago with a lot more challenges.
You know what? They're kind of a wishbone type look. I mean, they're not running the wishbone, but the same type of principles with the offense he's running, where it's going to be a lot of necessary discipline for Nebraska's defense. Coach Chenander spent time on that. Overall, this is what the Northern Illinois coach Thomas Hammock thinks of Nebraska. A quick little scouting look from his eyes.
They have a lot of athletes on offense, and it starts at the quarterback position. I think the running back number 28 is a guy that if you get him in space, he can take it the distance. They got the two wide receivers, number 1 and number 10, who, you know, they got creative ways to get those guys the ball, and they have an opportunity to get one-on-one matchup. So to me, you know, anytime that you have explosiveness and dynamic players with the ball in their hand, I think it creates problems, as well as special teams. You know, they got a number one is back there, and, you know, those are game-changing type plays where one guy can change the game. And so we got to have all hands on deck when we're trying to defend those areas.
More from Hammock. This is his take on Melvin Gordon. He was Melvin Gordon's running backs coach in college, knows Melvin well. What the hell are you doing with the holdout here? Has he talked to Melvin at all?
The hardest position in the National Football League to play is the running back position. And so you play in a position with the shortest shelf life, and they want to devalue the position. Well, these guys are feeling like, hey, I'm a big part of why we're having success, so let me take advantage of the leverage that I have to try to get paid. And I think what you see is, you know, when they value you at a high level, like Ty Gurley or Ezekiel Elliott, they'll pay you. If they think they can do better or get somebody else, they won't pay you. But until people start standing up for themselves at that position, you know, the pay scale is going to continue to stay the same. And I think what guys are doing is they working together, trying to get the floor raised where everybody else can have an opportunity to make the most earning potential that they can make.
He's right on. You need to get paid as a running back. Are you valuable? Can we win with you or without you? That's the question. Clearly, Melvin fumbles enough and San Diego's good enough. Melvin's great, but is he Zeke? Is he Barkley? I mean, is he that caliber? Is he Gurley? Chargers don't think so yet. We'll wind out a Tuesday.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
What final time? Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Colton Stone. One more cut here from Tom Hammack and some wow guys in the NFL. And this was a pretty good question from Doug with the Northern Illinois head coach who just spent the last 5 years in the NFL. Who are the dudes that wow you in the league at running back?
Probably Alvin Kamara. I really loved him coming out of Tennessee and just everything that he can do in the running game and the passing game. I mean, you know, he's phenomenal. Ezekiel Elliott, you know, the break tackles like he does at a high level, he's phenomenal. I mean, it's just amazing to see those guys and how big the defensive players are and what they can do in the running game and the passing game. It's just a joy to watch.
Okay. They are, unless you're playing them in fantasy. We're going to just leave that one alone this week. Dennis Rodman, ESPN 30 for 30 tonight. Who is the most love to hate or hate to love guy for you? Like most polarizing. Can pick any sport. And Rodman was it for me. And I loved him when he was with Chicago. And I didn't like dislike the bad boy Piston teams. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when they got that, they more so Lambeer. But they crossed a line when it came to pinata time on Jordan. I didn't like that because I was cheering for the Bulls. But I kind of liked Detroit, so I was a real schmuck in the early teen years, I should say. But the Rodman was just a joy to watch because he didn't care if he scored. He was pure hustle, athleticism, toughness, and just grit. He'd have to go try and D up Karl Malone on the block. And he's given away 50 pounds. But Rodman just would crank Pearl Jam and crush the weight room till 4 a.m. That, and he was really cool to sit by, my buddy pharmacist Jeff tells me, at a Pearl Jam show in Wrigley. And I love this pink boa hat. I thought it was sweet.
Yeah. When it comes to, like, love to hate, or easy to hate, despite the success, I mean, Tom Brady's up there. Just because, like,
are you sick of how much fawning there is?
I'm tired of them winning.
Yeah, but have they beat your team, your Dolphins?
Washington? No.
Sorry.
That's okay.
You wear a Dolphins hat. I mean, Washington's not really been relevant.
No. And maybe that's where most of my frustration comes from.
You got a Gruden, man. Don't know what to tell you. And you got the wrong Gruden.
I mean, LeBron's kind of that guy that's easy to hate, but at the same time, like,
I don't hate on him at all.
He's wildly successful. I'm just saying in general.
Sure.
I don't know. There's not a lot of guys where I go like, man, that is the guy that changes like whether I'm going to watch that game or not.
He was kind of must watch, but he was part of the Beatles, so to speak, or pick a great group because mm-hmm. You had Jordan, you had Pippen, you had him, you had some of the guys like Kerr and John Paxson, they didn't play together ever. But I'm saying you had some role guys with the Bulls and those championship teams. Kurt emails in Chris@HaleVarsity.com. If I was Rodman during the junior high years and I was nowhere near that athletic, I was probably more like Lambeer, to be honest with you. Loaded tomorrow. Rick Pizzo going to be with us. A shoey Wednesday. And, yeah, how about Brad Edwards? We'll talk tomorrow at 4. Thanks.